Good evening and welcome to Transatlantic History Ramblings from Lauren and Brian. I am Lauren from Swansea in the United Kingdom, and with me, as always,
it's Lauren in Buffalo. No, it's Brian in Buffalo, New York, US of A. Where, guess what, Lauren? It's not snowing today.
Has the snow melted? It's raining here, though.
The snow did melt. It was in the 20s. For like 4 days in a row, and then today it's 60.
Ah. Oh.
Yeah, so that's why I sound like shit.
It's still quite cold with us. It is raining. It is Holy Week, and I've just been to the first event of Holy Week. So tonight wasn't really anything to do with Holy Week, because Holy Week doesn't really kick off until Thursday. However, our church likes to organize something every day of the week to put us on the path of the cross. So we're thinking about something, we're being mindful of the reason that Jesus went to the cross for us. And it was a very lovely talk with Mandy Baton. She's very lovely. And I got to read from Colossians for her to start the service. So I was really happy because I love reading in church. And I'm so excited, Brian. I'm so excited. I served communion for the first time. I was a cupbearer. I was so excited.
Did you give people seconds?
No, I didn't. No, you're not allowed.
So there's Lauren. I said, so there's Lauren in the church. Pouring the wine.
Pouring wine. Getting everybody shirt first.
Everybody got your shit pissed. Exactly. Here's my question, Lauren. How did you know it's Holy Week? Because do you know what this week is?
Oh, is it some fancy rounders nonsense?
It is. It is the opening day of baseball season. My beloved Yankees begin on Thursday. Holy Week indeed, Lauren. It's baseball season. Guess we have a different take on Holy Week, huh?
Ah, yes. But it all ends with chocolate eggs at the end of the week.
Not for me. I got the diabetes.
I don't have the diabetes because I get blood tested every month at the moment because my blood pressure won't do as it's told.
Do you feed the sheep chocolate?
Don't feed the sheep. Actually, I had Bichon Frise, and if you ever look at a picture of Bichon Frise, they look like sheep because they have wool, not fur.
They do. They have wool instead of hair.
So I did have three little sheep, but I have no little sheep now because they all died.
Okay. moving along. You know, something happened to my brother yesterday that made me feel real bad for him. Because he told a joke to like five people and no one laughed at it.
Oh.
And I felt bad for him because I felt like he was living in my shoes. The difference is I thought the joke was funny. Do you want to hear what his joke was, Lauren?
Yes.
Okay, so earlier today, I went to McDonald's and ordered two large fries, but instead I got about 75 little ones. No, you didn't like it either?
No.
I thought it was a great joke. I can't eat fries, though, you know.
Why?
Well, it's all carbs, and, you know, I've got the diabetes.
Oh yeah. Do you like inject for the diabetes?
I do. I have insulin shots I take every night, and you know, pills I take twice a day.
That was one thing that I was scared about because I know the listeners don't know very much about my health issues, but I've had a bit of a health scare this year where it started last May when the optician, I don't know if they do it in America, they might do, but when you go to the optician, they do a retinal photograph.
Yep.
And on the retinal photograph, they noticed that some of the blood vessels around the optic nerve were swollen. So then I got referred to a neurologist and things were taking a while. And in that time, I had a funny episode where something happened with my eye and I wasn't quite happy. So I went as an emergency patient to an optician and she said, oh, no, it's probably it. She goes, that, you know, there is something there, but it's probably this benign condition that happens as people age and, you know, such, called disc drusen, and there's nothing to worry about. And so I thought, okay, well, that's the best case scenario, because I don't want idiopathic intracranial hypertension anyway, so great, I'll just wait for my
MRI. Me neither. I don't want any diseases I can't pronounce.
And then back in December, I was having really bad dizzy spells, and I mean really, really bad dizzy spells. So I rang the doctor and I thought, you know, look, I'm having dizzy spells. I you know, I'm waiting to see the, because I didn't think, because I'd been referred to the specialist, that they would do anything. Because, you know, the specialist sort of outranks the GP, but they said, oh, go and have your blood pressure tested. And I did, and it was high, and it carried on being high. So they got me in to see the specialist, and I had lumbar puncture. And I always thought, oh, it's going to come back that I've got diabetes. I'm sure it's got, but nothing does. My blood sugar is perfect.
My blood sugar is perfect.
I know. Do you know what was really bad, though? After you have a lumbar puncture, they give you a cup of coffee or tea and a biscuit. And I was there eating a biscuit. And they go, let's take your blood sugar. And I'm like, I'm just eating a biscuit.
Yeah, that you can't take blood sugar after eating a biscuit. For you American listeners, that would be a cookie.
Yes. And so they did. And it was fine. I don't recommend.
Yeah, that's funny.
And then the lumbar puncture came back that I do have idiopathic intracranial hypertension. They've decided not to treat that and just focus on the blood pressure. But I don't recommend spinal taps. Yeah, not nice.
No, but the band Spinal Tap is great. And they, the are, sequel, they are. The sequel's coming out. They're filming it now.
Are they going to turn it up to, I know, 21?
I would hope, at least. You know, so you have these problems with your eyes. Do you know, Lauren, if you look really, really close in the mirror, all mirrors look like eyeballs?
Why?
No?
Brian.
That's funny. You don't get it, you know, you're just looking, yeah, real close. That's all you see is the eyeball, Lauren.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. It's so funny.
Apparently you didn't like it. You don't like my jokes.
So we've heard about our respective weeks, both of which are holy to us in different ways. yeah.
Yeah.
And I was late to tonight's recording because I was at something and I was sitting there chatting and drinking coffee.
Yeah, she was going, I don't want to go talk to that freaking stupid Yankee about fancy rounders, so give me another cup of coffee.
Oh, I don't mind. I admit, you know, that period where, you know, you didn't schedule any interviews for us was welcome, because it was quite hard to sit in a chair for a bit. But, you know, I did miss you.
Oh, that's sweet. I missed you too, Lauren. And Sarah just walked in the door. Sarah missed you too.
Hi. Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
No, Sarah hates my jokes too, so don't talk to her.
No, I just think they're terrible sometimes.
She thinks my jokes are... Lauren, you want to hear a joke that she thought was terrible?
Yes, please.
Hey, Lauren.
Yes.
How long does it take for a pirate to get through the alphabet?
I don't know.
A long time, because he always gets lost at sea.
Yeah, that is terrible. She's right. I like Sarah. She has good taste.
Okay, first off, they always get lost at sea.
Oh, no, I heard you. I did hear you. Yes, I did hear you.
Lost at sea.
I heard that, Brian. I am not disputing that I didn't get the joke. I just don't think it's funny.
Yeah, it's
pretty
hammy.
I like ham. She said it's hammy, and I like ham. And, you know, this is Easter week, so, like, in America, we have ham.
Can you eat ham?
No, the grocery store's kind of really.
What's that? I didn't hear you, Lauren.
Can you eat ham because of your diabetes?
Yeah, ham's not bad.
Okay.
I don't do sugar glazes on it or anything, but yeah, so ham's okay.
I thought, well, it's more traditionally lamb, isn't it?
No.
Here it's lamb.
Ham is tasty. You know how I make ham? Me and Sarah make ham. We cover it in duck and soy sauce, and we have, like, Asian ham. My mom can. It's really good.
Did you... Well, ham... I think ham can mean something different here in the UK, because we have, like, ham luncheon meat that you can put in sandwiches.
And we we do have that, but you can get the whole ass of the pig and carve it up and eat it like that. That's ham.
Yeah. Yeah, but mostly we don't have ham. We'd be more... pork.
Yeah, we eat pork too, but Easter's a traditional ham meal, at least where I live. And the other thing they have that are like real popular in like where I live is things of butter that look just like lambs. Seriously, butter lambs. You can look them up online. They're really cute.
Peeps are quite cute. I've never been brave enough to buy them and eat them because I would fear that all my teeth would fall out.
What, butter lambs?
No, peeps.
Oh, peeps are so good, but I can't eat them because of the diabetes. But you know what's really cool, Lauren? If you get a peep and you put it in the microwave for about 5 seconds, it blows up like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. It's enormous.
Feed a family for a week.
But I can't eat that stuff because if I do, you know, I'll die.
Yeah, it does. It looks very yellow. I'm suspicious of the yellowness.
You know, and I don't want to eat that stuff and die.
No.
I want to die peacefully in my sleep like my grandfather did. Not screaming in horror like the passengers on his bus did.
I've heard that joke before.
Oh, you like that one?
Yeah, my dad used to say that one. So.
But I am lying, Lauren. He didn't die driving a bus. My grandfather really didn't die driving a bus.
I didn't think that he did, Brian.
I do remember his last words. I can never get him out of my head. I'll forever remember his last words. What the fuck are you doing with that pillow?
I think we should exit this conversation now because it's taken a very dark turn and go to our days in history.
Well, we could do that because apparently my jokes, you don't like my jokes, but I do like days in history. But before we go on to days in history, I gotta mention that last week's show.
Yes.
Wow, people's minds are blown by how fucking weird this thing is, and they ain't heard nothing yet because part two tonight is even weirder. And we couldn't even wrap it all up in part two. There's going to be a part three, Lauren. Can you believe it?
No, I can't.
It's strange and it's mysterious and it's scary. Terrifying stories. That didn't sound like scary music, did it?
No.
Okay, how about this? Was that scary?
Yes, that was scary.
How about if I put thunder in there, too? Part two is scary. No? All right. You know what is scary? Life without the bathroom buddy. See, the other day...
Oh, no, let's stop this now. Come on. No bathroom buddy talk.
Well, I was out somewhere, and, you know, emergency struck, and I was without the bathroom buddy. And no one should ever be without a bathroom buddy, Lauren. You want to go on to day in history, huh?
Well, Well, we can talk a bit more about what our listeners thought about last week's episode, but I don't really want to talk about the bathroom buddy. It's depressing.
Well, all I wanted to say is that Tim and Kurt are back for part two today, folks, so stay tuned. You're going to love it. If you think part one was weird, part two is even weirder. Now that that's out of the way, Lauren, why don't you clear your throat and give me a really good day in history?
Okay.
Today in history.
I said a good one, Lauren.
That was a good one.
Yeah, it was an okay one. Oh, all right, what you got for me?
So my day in history is the 25th of March, 1807. British Parliament abolishes the slave trade throughout the British Empire. Penalty of £120 per slave introduced for ship captains.
Yeah. Way before we did it here in America, Lauren, we were behind you on that one. But yeah, that was a good day in history.
I don't think that. I think it's quite interesting that we always had a very contentious history with it. Like, I can't say that we didn't do it. We did. And we did it throughout the British Empire, which at one point did include America, because that, you know, let's not forget before the war.
Yeah, I blame you for us having it.
But we always had a contentious relationship with it, because during the 16th century, if a slave stepped off, so say now a slave came from a different country and their ship docked in England. As soon as that slave stepped off the ship into England, they were technically a free person, because we didn't recognize slavery. But then over time, unfortunately, as the British Empire grew, we, you know, the enslavement of people was something that was profitable. And, you know, that is very regrettable history all around the world. And I don't think that we can just focus on the fact that Britain did it and America did it. I mean, civilizations as old as the Vikings did it. I mean, that's what they used to do to prisoners of war. You know, they used to claim these prisoners of war, and they used to force them into servitude, and not servitude as we would think of, you know, going into service as it became later on after slavery. But these were slaves. These weren't indentured servants.
No.
Slaves, these became property. So even though, yes, we focus on the British Empire, we focus on America and other countries such as those, but we've got to understand that slavery has been part of the DNA of human civilization since the beginning, but from very early on. You know, there has always been the ability of those in power, or those that believe themselves to be stronger, or those who can shout louder, and, you know, to subjugate those that they feel are inferior or weaker than themselves.
But what's really sick, Lauren, is that in America now, there's an element of the extreme right wing in our country. And I don't mean just random people. I'm talking people in positions of power, and people in positions of power in churches in this country of the extreme right side, that are saying things openly and publicly like slavery was good because it taught people a trade.
I disagree, because many of those people.
Yeah, you think?
Many of those people would have known the trade before they became a slave. And yeah, that was probably the reason.
But that's racist attitude of these people in this country. Slavery wasn't bad. It taught them a trade. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? They're saying the quiet parts out loud now in this country, and that's what really scares me.
Oh, it is scary.
Yeah.
And
scary, like. Not scary, like. We've already established my music pick for scary music sucks.
But it's just very, it's a very problematic topic of discussion. And there is a lot of work going on in heritage all around the world to decolonize and to reclaim stories and meanings within objects and in objects that were bought with the money that was the product of, you know, that was the wages of slavery or the profit of slavery.
So, yeah. So once again, Lauren, you brought us all down. We were up on that high of my great jokes and you smacked us into the face with reality of slavery.
Oh no, you've been seeing some of the, oh, writing this book that I'm doing. Oh, you should see some of the idiocy I've got to deal with, the conspiracy theories for people, for monarchies that have, you know, for monarchs and queens that have been dead for like hundreds of years. Oh, so I am.
Speaking of monarchs and royal family.
Yes.
I am so disgusted with the way the American media treated Kate Middleton's privacy.
Well, the thing is, what's concerning for me is you had an American doctor say that they couldn't tell what type of cancer she had after an operation. And that's absolutely untrue, because what is a biopsy? A biopsy is removing a part of a lump.
Yeah.
And testing it after the fact.
But just the massive crazy conspiracy theories by the U.S. journalists, quote unquote journalists, harassing these people because she's not public, she's hidden, it's like, yeah, it's called fucking privacy. Just because they're a royal, let them go. And what's even more disgusting, and this is the last thing I'll say because I don't want to make the show go, you know, sad and morose like you do, Lauren. But a top advisor of candidate Trump actually posted publicly, Kate Middleton has cancer just like the king. I bet you they both got the COVID shot.
Yeah, they did, actually. They both did get.
But trying to say that the COVID shot is giving people cancer, fuck them, okay? Fuck
yeah,
them.
Yeah, but that is kind of distasteful, because my
distasteful
father, it makes me angry, and distasteful is a very kind word that I was using. But
yeah, and what's really sick is it's not just some random asshole saying this. This is someone with major political influence and power.
But then, you know, Harry and Meghan haven't helped the situation either, because they, you know, it somehow got leaked to the press, their response that they'd reached out privately and everything like that. So it's also very difficult, because what we've got to remember is, yes, the Prince and Princess of Wales are public figures, and they have never not shared with the public things that are going on in their life at a time when the public needs to know about it. And but we've got to remember is they also have three young children, the oldest of which is only 10. Now, I've had to tell young children that their grandfather had cancer, and it was hard. I cannot believe the difficulty it is saying, not only does your granddad have cancer, but your mum's got cancer too. I can't imagine how hard that is for them. And they also, they needed that time to process it with the children, because if they'd have made a statement to the press, Charlotte and George can read. Louis may be learning to read now. So, you know, they would find out from their friends, or someone in school would say something like that. So, you know, they've got to manage how the children find out things. And the thing is what I think people are forgetting is that chemotherapy is difficult, no matter whether your cancer has made you very poorly or whether you found it early and you're strong and you're young, because you don't know how that therapy is going to affect your body. You don't. It can cure somebody that is very weak, and it can kill somebody that was very strong. It's very.
And people gotta also realize they may be a king and a princess, but they're still people with a family.
And also, as well, is I can speak for, you know, the one thing that does worry me about ever getting cancer as a woman is my hair is losing my hair, you know, hair, you know, whether
yeah,
have long
too.
Hair, short hair, blue hair, yellow hair, pink hair, gray hair. Your hair means a lot to you as a woman. It is.
And as a man, you've seen my hair, Lauren.
Yeah, it's your crown. It's your, yeah. You know, it's your comfort. It's,
I
you
like
know,
to call it my beautiful flowing curly locks.
So, you know, it's just a minefield. I can't, you know, she, and it's just ridiculous and pathetic. And I mean, it's not just American media, it's British media as well.
My beautiful flowing curly locks, Lauren.
Let's leave that here. And you've got to go now. So,
okay. First off, they are beautiful and flowing and curly.
They are, yes.
Just because they're more gray than red now, no need to make fun of me.
But I'm just noticing the time, and you have not yet said your day in history.
Oh, you want me to give a day in history? All right. Enough talking about my beautiful flowing curly locks. They're silky too.
They're
silky and soft. And anyway, my day in history. You think your day in history was big? Well, your day in history was big, but my day in history. You ready for this?
Yes.
March 25th, 1882, in a department store in New York City. Was America's first demonstration of pancake making. A public demonstration of pancake making, Lauren.
That's amazing.
Yeah! Isn't that a badass day in history? I know. You brought us into, like, you know, England abolished slavery, and that's good and all, but we made pancakes.
You did.
Some would call them flapjacks. But I'm not one of them. I call them pancakes. Lauren, pancakes or waffles? What do you pick?
Pancakes.
Syrup or cream?
Syrup.
What kind of syrup? Apricot? Maple?
Maple syrup.
You're like a good Canadian girl there.
I am.
You know. I can't eat pancakes or syrup, but they do sell this pancake mix of carb-free pancakes and their sugar-free syrup. I'm going to try that sometime, Lauren. Do you think it's going to taste like shit?
No, some of those that food can taste very nice.
Well, I'm hoping it's going to taste nice because that's what I'm looking forward to that someday. But yes, today in history, March 25th, 1882, in a department store in New York City. The first public demonstration of pancake making. How I wish I were there for that, Lauren. You know how thrilling that must have been?
You'd have had a heart attack and three strokes.
I'm telling you. Oh, and then they pour the batter. Then they flip the pancake.
You'd have had a heart attack in three strokes.
Oh, yes. You know, I went to the doctor, and he told me I could masturbate whenever I want to. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He said I could have a stroke at any minute. Threw in a little extra joke there, Lauren.
Thank you, Brian.
Oh, well, on that note, Lauren, we are going to bring back on Tim and Kurt, and we talked all about the Philadelphia experiment last week, but today we're venturing into, some people say, the result of the Philadelphia experiment, the infamous Montauk Project. And for those of you who watch Stranger Things or are a fan of it and saw that weirdness in the show, that all comes from the Montauk Project. So, we're going to bring our experts on the weird, the wild, and the strange, Tim and Kurt, back on. Do you know what I'm going to do, Lauren? I'm going to let you fire up the magic interview box
Thank
today.
You.
It's the magic interview box.
Ooh, that was good. You did a damn good job pressing that button, Lauren. Have I ever told you how good you are pressing the buttons?
Yes, you have.
Yeah, like that time you pressed record? Brilliant.
The two times I pressed record.
Okay,
now. There were two times.
Well, the first time was a test run. The second time was perfection. I have such faith in your ability to press these buttons, Lauren. I'm going to let you flip the switch.
Thank you very much.
So, Lauren, we are back for part two of nuttiness and craziness and strangeness. We couldn't pack it all into the last episode. So we got Kurt. We got Tim. We're back. We're ready. We're wild. We're crazy. We're going to talk more Philadelphia Experiment and into the mysterious Montauk Project. Now, before we begin, I do have to tell everybody this. Thank you all for the emails and the comments about this story is far stranger than you thought it was. Because I was talking to Tim and Kurt off of the show saying, all right, guys, my mind is blown because this is way fucking nuttier than I even thought it was. Now, Tim's reaction was, yeah, it's pretty wild. And Kurt was like, yeah. So we're going to go back. First off, welcome back, guys. How you doing?
Good. It's good to be back. Thanks for having us on again.
Yep. Appreciate taking this into a part two. It certainly is a subject that requires it in probably 3, 4, 5, 6 as well.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not saying this is going to be part two of two. This could be part two of multiple parts.
Yeah, because I feel like today's could branch off into MK Ultra discussion, and that's a whole can of worms too.
Yeah, so when we left off, we were talking about Al Bielek, the man who traveled time, walked through walls, lived in the future, lived in the past, was a tour guide in a time and space he never was in before, and yet actually did know some details that most people shouldn't have known involving an actual project that we know was real, the Montauk Project. So, Kurt, I'm going to let you explain what the hell that was and how the hell did Al Bielek actually know this stuff?
So I don't have a whole ton of Al Bielek in here. This is all stuff that we used in the Strange Sessions episode about the Montauk Project. But you're going to see that there's a huge similarity between this and the story of the Philadelphia Experiment, because both of them, I feel, start with a base that you're like, yeah, I could totally see this happening. And then from there, it just gets all sorts of crazy. So this is more of the same. If you liked the Philadelphia Experiment, this is more of the same. This one, I buy parts of this much more than the Philadelphia Experiment. So in the early 1980s, a U.S. military base sat at Montauk Point on the eastern tip of Long Island, New York, and it had been there for decades. It was a very active base that contained Army, Navy, and Coast Guard personnel. The grounds were actually decorated to look like a New England fishing town to avoid enemy suspicions, even going as far as painting windows onto the bunkers. It was officially known as the U.S. Military Reservation, but everybody around there just called it Camp Hero because it was built on the site of an old fort that was known as Fort Hero. Locals were always talking about strange things going on at the base and hearing weird things and seeing weird things, but for the most part, it just seemed to be your run-of-the-mill military base. The base ended up shutting down in 1981, and it had a huge radio antenna that just became a part of the horizon for the locals. Everybody just knew, you know, you were used to seeing that huge radio antenna. Then in 1992, a man named Preston Nichols, and I believe that's the, going back to the Philadelphia Experiment, wasn't Preston Nichols the one that was supposedly the brother, or was that Duncan Cameron?
That was Duncan Cameron.
Duncan Cameron. Okay. Then in 1992, a man named Preston Nichols published a book called The Montauk Project, Experiments in Time. Preston Nichols was born in 1946 on Long Island, New York, and claimed to have degrees in psychology, electrical engineering, and parapsychology. He said that around the time that Camp Hero was closing, he began to have weird memories of the base pop up in his mind, and then realized that he had repressed the memories of working there, or his memories had been somehow erased. He then goes on to talk about some pretty insane stuff that supposedly happened at the base.
No.
But for now, let's go back to the beginning of the base, according to the conspiracy theories. The seeds for the Montauk experiments began with what's known as the Philadelphia experiment or Project Rainbow. So
or
basically
seed part one.
Yeah. So basically the Philadelphia experiment is kind of where the Montauk experiment, the Montauk project came from. So if you go back and listen to part one, with all this time travel stuff, teleportation, and all the stuff that happened with the Eldridge and the Philadelphia experiment, the military decided they wanted to build a place where they could experiment more with this stuff, and that's where Camp Hero in Montauk came about. And who better to help get the place going than Al Bielek and his brother, who had actually seen the place and visited it supposedly when they time traveled there on the Eldridge.
From 1943 into the 1980s, by the way.
Yeah, it all sounds like a really bad episode of Doctor Who. So Camp Hero was created, and on the surface it was your typical functional military base, but in underground levels beneath that, all sorts of craziness was supposedly going on. In order to perform these experiments, it also worked with the nearby Brookhaven Institute that specialized in nuclear and high energy physics, superconducting magnets, and matter physics. One of the things that was said to have gone on in the underground levels is that homeless people were kidnapped to be used in tests that were offshoots of the Philadelphia experiment, where they were subjected to huge electromagnetic fields to see how it affected them physically and mentally, and most of them died from the experiments. It's also said that bizarre genetic experiments were conducted on one of the lower levels of Camp Hero, and that one of these experiments managed to escape from the camp where it made its way to the Pine Barrens of New Jersey and became known as the Jersey Devil.
No! Whoa! 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 Hold the fuck up. You have blown my mind here.
The devil.
What's that, Lauren?
What we do in the shadows, Jersey Devil.
Yeah, the Jersey Devil's a big thing. I mean,
the hockey team is named the New Jersey Devils because of this legend. They're saying that this came from Montauk?
Yes, that it was the product of a genetic experiment that somehow escaped from the military base.
Well, all I know is that those motherfuckers invented the defense zone trap, which ruined hockey for me. Fuck the Devils. Go Sabres. So wait a second. So the New Jersey Devil, which I always thought was kind of like some weird Northeast version of Chupacabra.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying, no, this comes from Montauk.
Supposedly. Supposedly.
Yeah, I should point out that the mythology of the Jersey Devil has been around the Pine Barrens since probably the early 19th century. Mm-hmm. So...
but maybe it time traveled. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, there's a lot of different supposed origin stories of the Jersey Devil. But Kurt. I guess this is just another one to throw into the mix.
Yeah, that's Kurt. A good one. I don't know if I heard that part of it.
Yeah.
Let me tell you now. If you work Mothman into this story, this is now officially my favorite episode ever.
I don't remember seeing any Mothman.
Okay.
But maybe we can add it in there somewhere.
Yeah, everyone else has added shit.
Yeah. But one of the most prevalent stories about the Montauk experiments involved something called the Montauk chair. This was said to be a chair that was specially fitted with devices to enhance and focus physical or psychic powers. These devices were said to include those made by scientists at Camp Hero and from alien devices recovered from crashed UFOs.
Of course.
Yep.
Yeah,
in his book, The Montauk Project, Experiments in Time, Nichols says, quote, in the 1950s, ITT, a defense-related research company, developed sensor technology that could literally display what a person was thinking. It was essentially a mind-reading machine. It operated on the principle of picking up the electromagnetic functions of human beings and translating those into an understandable form. It consisted of a chair in which a person would sit. Coils, which served as sensors, were placed all around the chair. There were also three receivers, six channels, and a Cray 1 computer, which would display what was on the person's mind digitally or on a screen. I'm guessing they used floppy drives in those days. I don't know. It was still a mystery how this technology was developed. It had been suggested that the research was aided by the Sirians, an alien race who had come from the star system known as Sirius. This theory has the aliens providing the basic design and humans working it out from there.
Hence, Alan Parsons Project brought the aliens.
Oh, I love Alan Parsons Project. Just love Alan Parsons Project.
Oh, yeah.
But so I got to cut you off there for a second because I got to go to our resident UFO expert. Tim, what do you know about the Sirians? And I don't mean the Syrians from Syria. I mean the Syrians from Sirius.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know that the star Sirius is a red giant. So anybody who said that they lived on a planet around Sirius had to have been pretty uncomfortable. So maybe that's why they're here on Earth, things got a little too hot for them.
Wouldn't they be like Superman then? Because didn't he come from like Krypton was like a red giant?
It was a red giant, right?
So when he came here, he had all this. So these fucking Sirians are like all Superman?
Apparently.
Yeah.
That explains how the boat moved.
Well, and, you know, you hear these stories added to the Montauk Project, and it just makes me think of other types of disinformation stories that have circulated over the years, where, you know, there is probably some veins of truth what Kurt was saying, and then all this other stuff, the whole thing that we're talking about today is, sounds crazy, but you go and add further crazy, you know, like up the crazy, you know, 11%. So when people hear this story, naturally, you know, they're just going to like, oh, yeah, Sirians. Okay. You know, and just ignore it.
Well, I do know, and I am not someone who is conspiracy theory minded. As you all know, I'm always the skeptic in these things. But I do know, and maybe this is going to sound like I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist, but I do know that notoriously, not just our military, but other militaries will use disinformation to cover up projects. Because if we're doing shit here that's for national security or safety, we don't want people bothering us. If we say, yeah, that's the place where the alien ships, you're all going to think we're nuts and you're going to ignore it. There'll be a few crackpots who'll come at it, but you could just weed them out. It's an easy way to distract from what you're really doing.
Yeah, like back when you had the stealth bomber, you wanted people to think it was a UFO because then nobody's going to take it seriously and look into it.
Which is funny because you look at so many people who, you know, sketched the UFO you saw at the time, and you look at those sketches like, holy shit, that's the stealth bomber.
Yeah.
You know, so, but you convince most of the world that these crazy people are seeing UFOs. See, there's nothing there. And they hid the stealth bomber till it was, you know, flying at air shows for all of us to ooh and ah at.
Yep. Till it was obsolete and they were working on the next best thing.
Yeah.
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 So that doesn't make, you know, that doesn't surprise me. Like, you know, this base in New Jersey tried to look like a fishing town because they're probably doing some, like, you know, military testing, you know, what they do, national security stuff, whatever. I don't know how the Jersey Devil works into that.
Well, you know, well, like Tim mentioned in the last episode about the rooms having like psychedelic paintings on the wall, which would 100% be something that they would have used in MKUltra when they were, you know, filling people with LSD to see if they could control their minds. So something like that could easily have been going on there that they were happy that there was all this other craziness coming out to cover that up.
Or maybe, just maybe, those underground tunnels are where the mutants live, where they worship the bomb, and Charlton Heston's going to come and blow the earth up, just like beneath Planet of the Apes, which was underneath New York, if you remember. No?
I just remember Nova.
That was in the first. She was in the second one
when I was very young. Yeah, when I was very young, that was That was one of the blossomings of my, oh, I like this.
That's because you're a misogynist and she didn't speak.
See what I never really thought about that, but you kind of have a point there.
She was in the sequel too, by the way, and she spoke in the sequel.
Did she?
She just said the
I
word.
I don't think I ever saw the sequel.
Oh, all five of the original ones are great. Anyway. There's these underground mutants with Victor Buono, and they worship a nuclear bomb because that's what made them mutants. And then Charlton Heston blows up the Earth at the end. Mm-hmm. So, Montauk Project.
Well, the television series on Netflix, Stranger Things, you know, its genesis came from the and in fact. It was going to, the original pilot, I guess, was going to be a lot closer to what was going on in Montauk, but then there was fear that Preston Nichols and some of the other people who were involved in the original books were going to go and try and sue him. So yeah. they changed the details a bit.
Lauren, I gotta ask you, because you're the only one that's overseas from where we are. Was Stranger Things a big deal in the UK? Because it was huge in America.
Yeah, it's a big, massive deal over here. We love it. We have a musical, a touring musical with puppets about it and everything.
Cool.
Okay, yeah, because it became such a cultural phenomenon in the US, which I didn't get because, you know, I'm older and I saw it was a show about kids. I figured it was for kids. And it was Sarah, you know, was watching it. And after like the third season, she's like, no, you really got to watch this show. It's not what you think it is. And I got to admit, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I watched the first season and got away from it. But there was so much hubbub going on about the scene where Max was running away from the bad guy and the song Running Up That Hill.
Mm-hmm.
By Kate Bush. So I finally watched that scene, and I will 100% die on the hill that might be one of the best scenes from a TV show or movie ever. I mean, that scene was just so, so good.
Yeah. It's a surprisingly good show.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be, you know, oh, it's another, like, what was Nickelodeon's Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah.
Some kind of spooky paranormal show for kids, but it's not.
No, and did they nail the 80s stuff? Holy cow. I mean, I was their age, like, when this stuff was going on to them, and they just absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, that kind of disturbs me, too, is that it is, like, looking in. We're time traveling, Kurt.
Yeah, we are time traveling.
But, yeah, I knew that it was based on Montauk. How much of it is based on the legend and lore? In your opinion, or how much is complete, I can't say dramatic license because all the stories involving Montauk are dramatic license, but what elements of Stranger Things do you think really parallel the supposed actual events?
Well, we're going to be coming up to some stuff that I'll be talking about that possibly, but I think a lot of the underground, you know, just the top secret stuff is kind of reflective of it, I would think.
Right. Yeah. The psychic experiments.
Yes.
And all the Matthew Modine shit then.
Yeah.
And the use of kids.
Good.
Yes.
And the use of kids. Yeah. Yep,
we're going to get to that in a little bit.
Again, Matthew Modine is so good in that show, isn't he?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
Okay, so now Duncan Cameron, he came up in the last episode. That is, oh boy. So when that is actually who Al Bielek is, because Duncan Cameron was placed into Al Bielek's infant body, I guess. So anyway, Duncan Cameron, who was a quote walk-in soul, happened to have stronger than usual psychic abilities and was able to access a fixed time loop between the Montauk Project and the Philadelphia Experiment. When he used the Montauk chair, he was able to manifest objects or use it for remote viewing. According to Preston Nichols' book, quote, "The first experiment was called the Seeing Eye. With a lock of a person's hair or other appropriate object in his hand, Duncan could concentrate on the person and be able to see as if he was seeing through their eyes, hearing through their ears, and feeling through their body. He could actually see through other people anywhere on the planet." So here we go. Wanting to experiment more with the chair and with other people's psychic abilities, subjects started to be taken and used against their will. According to an article on allthatisinteresting.com called, quote, the Montauk Project, the alleged U.S. military program that inspired Stranger Things, the article says, quote, "But more so than remote viewing or any of the other claims Nichols makes, the one about the abduction of young children, some no older than four, to use as subjects in the Montauk Project's various experiments is surely the most shocking. Nichols refers to these underage abductees as the Montauk Boys and says that they were snatched off the street or even taken from their homes. According to Nichols, these children were so psychologically broken down by the Montauk Project that most would forget all about their time at Camp Hero for the rest of their lives. And the stories of the Montauk Boys only becomes more intriguing when someone started coming forward to confirm them. In 2017, a 52-year-old Michigan man named Stuart Swerdlow came forward saying that just like Preston Nichols and Al Bielek, he started to experience repressed or erased memories of being at the Montauk base, finally realizing that he was indeed one of the Montauk Boys. He said, quote, "When the experiment started, they target expendable boys like orphans, runaways, or the children of drug addicts, the kind of kids that no one would really come looking for. The aim was to fracture your mind so that they could reprogram you. They would change the temperature from very hot to very cold, starve you, then overfeed you. I remember being beaten with a wooden pole, and they loved to hold your head underwater until you nearly drowned. That was very effective. It makes a person likely to listen and then to obey their, quote, rescuer. They also used LSD to put our brains into an altered state." So the scientists, Duncan Cameron, and the unwilling Montauk Boys fine-tuned the Montauk chair to the point where they were able to use it for all sorts of otherworldly experiments, including ripping open a hole in space-time. A time tunnel was constructed, think Stargate, and legends say that the tunnel was used to meet Jesus, to visit Mars, and to manipulate the outcomes of the Civil War and World War II. Extraterrestrials were said to have been encountered using the time tunnel, and alliances were created that allowed the aliens to be housed at and to use the Montauk base for research. It's said that they used the time tunnel to travel to the year 6037, only to find a giant city in ruins. The only thing they saw that was untouched was a statue of a golden horse with a clock in its stomach in the middle of the city square that had weird inscriptions on it. So the experiments continued until August of 1983. In his book, Nichols says, quote, "We followed the orders, but nothing out of the ordinary occurred until August 12th. Then something very strange happened. All of a sudden, our equipment seemed to drop into sync with something else. We didn't know what function the system was now attuned to, but at that point, the USS Eldridge, the ship used for the Philadelphia experiment, appeared through the portal. We had locked up with the Eldridge. At this point, the Duncan from 1943 appeared and could be seen through the time portal along with his own brother. Both were crew members of the USS Eldridge. We kept the Duncan of 1983 from seeing his past self so as to avoid a time paradox and resultant negative effects."
Okay, but look, if there is such a thing as a time paradox, it doesn't fucking matter whether you see yourself or not. You're both there at the same time.
Yeah.
So, okay, calling bullshit on the time paradox thing, first off, as a not of everything else.
But, I start to say, just the time paradox?
If that's your only problem with this.
Yeah.
My problem, and I got to, once again, I got to refer to the experts here. And Kurt, I don't know if you would be the expert here, or Tim, I'm not trying to pigeonhole either you into being fucking lunatics. But you got into the whole thing with remote viewing and psychic chairs. it's almost like they're bleeding in the what is it, Indigo Swan story.
Yeah, yeah.
If Lauren, are you familiar with Indigo Swan?
No, I'm not.
How do you do it justice, Tim?
Remote viewing is one of those things that I'm like super interested in because there's a lot of. I don't think that one's necessarily BS.
Yeah. Well, and Ingo Swann,
I'm sorry,
was probably, you know, the king of just, you know, that natural ability of remote viewing without all of this, you know, chair and electromagnetic fields and stuff that, you know, allegedly took place at the Montauk project.
He also liked to paint ding-dings.
Yeah, well, that was his day job. I mean, he was an artist. He had a gallery.
His art always involved ding-dings, didn't it? You ever see his art, Kurt?
No, I haven't.
It is. He was a good artist, but it's like he just like painted ding-dings. That was his thing. So it almost sounds like, yeah, you're going into that territory, but he was on the West Coast doing these experiments, I thought. Now, you're also moving into the territory. You're combining MKUltra, you're combining Montauk, you're combining Philadelphia Experiment, you're combining Swan.
It's almost like a sampler platter of fringe.
I can't believe
beliefs.
We're going to bring them up two shows in a row. You're mixing in Andrew Bishago because the whole thing with the kids doing these experiments, that was his whole thing, is it was all the kids were taken to do these jumps in time travel and ports. In that case, though, they weren't abducted children, they were the children of the scientists.
And that's very much like a Stranger Things thing, you know, also with Fringe, because Fringe kind of, the TV show Fringe was, which was amazing, had that too, where they were tested as kids and given, you know, certain drugs and stuff as kids.
And I forgot to even mention, plus we're combining the whole satanic panic, repressed memories, regression. The whole, which is so 80s.
Because the kidnapping of children, torturing them.
Exactly. Only remembering it through, you know, regression of, you know, hidden memories. That was the basis of the whole satanic panic of the 80s. Michelle Remembers kicked off that whole thing, that book. So it's almost like a perfect collision of these incidents. That you start in the 50s claiming it was something that happened a decade ago, so you can't really prove or disprove it. Then you get into the 80s, and all of a sudden the 80s mores of the time are in there, and you start talking about the LSD experiments of the 60s, and notice nothing is ever contemporary, and the stuff exposing it from the 80s was in 2017. So,
well, you know, a lot of the stuff he said was stuff that was supposedly used during MKUltra, where they would, you know, one of the things they would do is they would pump you full of like amphetamines at the same time that they pumped you full of like downers, just to completely mess you up and break down a person's mind so they can reprogram it like they want. I mean, so it's taking a lot of like the MK Ultra stuff too, when he was talking about them making it really hot and really cold, and that was kind of a MK Ultra thing.
It is funny how anytime something is revealed, it's always from, well, this happened 10, 20 years ago, but what's always added is stuff that is really in vogue at that time. Oh, all of a sudden, now I'm going to add to the story that 20 years ago, we had alien technology, and, you know, it's a little too convenient for my taste. What do you think? Am I being too cynical?
No.
You should be cynical.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely should be, because like I said, you know, I think that you see threads of truth throughout all of this that probably do go as far back as the alleged Philadelphia experiment, but other things just keep getting glommed onto it, either deliberately or that's just the way that people are. You know, somebody will, this is great. I bet aliens were involved as well.
Yeah. And the Jersey Devil.
And the Jersey Devil. Right. Yeah. Satanic Panic, you know, except it wasn't Satanist. It was the government, the evil government,
which is run by Satanist. That's the new theory. That's right. No, seriously, that's the whole the QAnon thing is that the government is run by a group of satanic pedophiles. That's right. You got the child abuse, you got the Satanism, you got all of it in the conspiracy theory of today.
And I'm sure if you would look as well, because, you know, QAnon, hit my microphone there, QAnon has also brought up reptilians as part of their worldview. And I'm not sure, but I bet you somewhere along the lines of the whole Montauk thing, there's reptilians involved.
There's always reptilians involved.
Yeah, it's, you know, everywhere I go, it's always reptilians, you know.
Because those reptilians are bad motherfuckers.
They are.
Lauren, how many reptilians are there in Wales?
None. It's just sheep.
Just sheep. There you go. But reptilians are shapeshifters, so some of them could be reptilians in disguise.
I think the reptilians hang out under the Denver airport, so I don't know if they really get over to Montauk a whole lot unless they take that super fast underground train. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't even get me going on that rabbit hole of that airport. That's Denver shit. Airport. But actually, you know, one thing I did want to ask, because there is one thing that a lot of times is covered in the realms of the strange and the weird and the paranormal that is absolutely nothing paranormal about it whatsoever. And it is a real phenomenon, and it is something that exists. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist. And, folks, there's nothing paranormal about it. But something that always freaked me out, too, number stations.
Yeah, I love number stations.
Is this giant antenna linked to number stations at all or anything?
It could be.
Number stations are freaky.
They were until I knew what they were. And once you knew what they were, it's kind of like, okay.
Once you find out what they were, they're freakier to me.
No, I think it's cool. I think it's cool then.
Oh, spy instructions. Yeah,
but I mean, everybody figured they were spy instructions. But once it came out that that's exactly what they were, then it's like, oh.
But yeah, I mean,
just there's something eerie about listening to them when you listen to like the Lincolnshire Poacher and some of the famous ones, you know.
Yeah.
They're creepy.
Yeah.
But it's because it's, you know, that electronic voice that they use. I mean, it's manufactured.
Yeah.
And so it's eerie. And then with all that, like the background static and other weird shortwave noises that go with them, you know, it is. It's like, what am I listening to?
Mm-hmm. Or wasn't there the one that would start out with like the Merry Melodies theme and then it would have like something else? And then
there was one called Yosemite Sam that had like a little clip of him saying something at the start of the number series, you know? Yeah,
crazy shit.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's involved.
Well, and you know, the antenna at Camp Hero was originally part of, there had been a radar installations all up and down the East Coast to look for, I suppose, enemy ships, you know, coming across the Atlantic. And I think that one is probably the only one that's left of that whole array. But it could both transmit a signal and receive. So some people pointed out that the antenna could not have been used, you know, because the whole part of the whole Montauk project was that at certain times they would broadcast some kind of radio frequency that was supposed to be able to influence people mentally. I can't remember what the hertz is for that frequency. But there were, you know, some of the naysayers were like, well, that antenna could not receive, it only transmitted. But no, it was both a receiver and a transmitter. And there are stories from people, longtime residents of the nearby towns, that there was weird crap going on. There is a couple of instances where, like, the town's animals, not only the dogs and cats, but I guess some of the wild deer and other wild animals would go crazy and, like, run into town, and there'd be, like, masses of, say, like, raccoons and possums, you know, with cats and dogs just taken to the streets and panicking.
Yeah, aren't there stories of, like, entire towns, like, all getting migraine headaches at, like, the same time and stuff,
too? You know, that's almost like Havana syndrome, the thing that's going on now, where all those people are getting sick and they think it was a microwave weapon or something like that.
Oh, which Well, yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, it's actually it was, you know, in the 60s that the whole experimentations using electromagnetics as a way to either influence people or to take them down started with MK Ultra. And again, when we say MK Ultra, there was all kinds of different names.
Yeah.
The MK Ultra was just the only one that we know about. So everyone kind of uses that as the catch-all name.
Oh, they've always experimented with things that could manipulate. I mean, I'm not even trying to be funny here.
No, they've experimented on whole towns, like small towns. Oh, yeah. They've experimented on. So it's not.
I don't have to try to be funny. I am funny. But the infamous brown note, you know, which they've experimented with. That, you know, I don't think it really exists. There are people that claim it does.
They did that on MythBusters. They tried it on MythBusters.
Did it work?
I don't think so.
No. So, you know, I mean, but I could absolutely see people experimenting with that, thinking, hey, let's give this a try.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you look at one instance or several instances where this, not the brown note, but some kind of radio frequency that could influence people during the first Gulf War. When you had all the Iranian soldiers in Kuwait, just all of a sudden, just give up. You know, I mean, these were guys that were supposedly part of the Revolutionary Guard and fairly well armed. Yet, you know, one American helicopter would come over, and these guys would just be, like, you know, standing outside with their hands up. And the allegations is that this was the first attempt to use these kind of electromagnetic frequencies that may have been perfected at Montauk in a real-time situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt for a second that all kinds of freaky and crazy shit has been, you know, experimented on. Not saying that it all works, but, you know, let's face it, you know, a lot of the psychic research that was done because of those leaked Soviet videos showing that they were, which was all a scam. It was the Soviets trying to trick us into wasting time and money, some of it. But you know that they did these experiments for years, thinking, let's see if we can, you know. So who's to say that? I don't think they were really trying to search for teleportation and invisibility on Philadelphia experiment. Like I said, there was this new crazy technology called radar. They were probably trying to figure out, how do we bypass this so we can get past the enemy? And it snowballs into this. But Montauk's a little weirder. Because I didn't know the Jersey Devil was involved. Damn you, Kurt. Now, here's the thing that led into this part of the conversation was that, you know, we spent so much time laughing at El Bielak. And for good reason, because it's cuckoo for Cocoa Puff shit. But he was right about things at Montauk that no one should have known, that have been proven later. Isn't that correct? Like,
well, who was the one that knew where the underground
tunnels were?
Yeah, was that El Bielak?
That was El Bielak, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the freaky thing, is that, holy shit, the guy was right.
Yeah. Like I said, there's a kernel of truth in here. It's just you don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, some of the early pictures, photographs, and videos that came out of the then supposedly defunct Camp Hero in a lot of these buildings, you know, you had these people who were actually just sneaking into the base and with their cameras and videos. And a lot of these buildings still contained an awful lot of really expensive looking and probably high voltage electronic equipment that hadn't been taken out yet. And there were rooms that had like huge cables that showed that there was other stuff there that had been taken away. But so obviously there was something more going on there rather than just being, you know, like an early warning radar installation, like they were saying it was.
Yeah, I know that. I don't know if it's necessarily Camp Hero, but a lot of ex-military facilities and locations have been, I don't want to say exposed, because it's not like they were hidden at that point, but by, what do they call it, Kurt? Urban exploration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, look it up on YouTube. That's a trendy thing people do now.
Mm-hmm.
Go into all these old buildings and places and film it all. And all kinds of weird shit has been found by these people that, they were doing some weird stuff here, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of what proved Al telling the truth about the tunnels and shit, isn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, Al Bielek's story is just, I'm sorry. It's just too crazy. It's too crazy for me. However, I think that he obviously knew something because of his knowledge of what was, you know, what could be later on found at Montauk. And so what that was, who knows? It's like you pointed out, Brian, in the last episode. I mean, he was an electrical engineer and very knowledgeable. And if, like you said, if you heard him talk on, say, like Art Bell or some of these other shows, he knows what he was talking about. I mean, he never hesitated about his answers, especially on the technical parts. So, you know, why he had this story, unless it was he was trying to achieve, for whatever reason, his 15 minutes of fame, you know, using the technical knowledge that he did have, and then just adding all the rest of this bullshit.
Or just that overactive imagination.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, some people who knew him previous to his claims about the Philadelphia experiment always did say that he was very imaginative.
I believe you mean his revelations about the Philadelphia experiment.
Right, right. And, you know, and that's the thing, you know, I mean, I always tell people to listen to these stories, you know, with that skeptical attitude of people who say that, well, yeah, you know, one day all of these repressed memories suddenly burst forth. Yeah, because I'm not too much of a big believer in the whole repressed memory things. You know, maybe some things. If, you know, you're a kid, you had like a really traumatic incident in your life, but some of these continued, you know, like throughout an entire kid's childhood of being kidnapped by aliens and the weird experiments, having that all repressed and then suddenly come out later. No, I don't think so.
Well, exactly. It's Michelle remembers, you know, all of a sudden she remembers this horrible, horrible physical abuse. They were literally sewing a tail and horns onto her one day. And then she was in school the next day. And then she was gone for weeks at a time for satanic ritual abuse. And she'd never miss school. She was never missing. None of her friends ever saw she was gone, but it was a bestseller because, you know, the devil did it.
And then there was the McMartin preschool stuff.
Look at all the people that went to jail.
Satanic. For yeah.
They came after me. That's another thing about Stranger Things that I loved, is they really went into the satanic panic thing that we lived through. Now, Kurt, I was a long hair, you know, musician teenager at the time of this height of satanic panic. And the police in the town I grew up in were telling my father, you have to get help for your son. He's a Satanist and he's a danger.
Wow.
He's a danger to society. You know, the police were, I'd never been in trouble with the police. I never did anything, but I was a long haired, you know, musician who was in a Catholic city.
Yeah. You know, I remember those days.
I mean, it was that crazy.
It was. And you know, I remember.
I have a dear friend whose parents put him in an institution because he played Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
And they tried to get him reprogrammed.
Yeah.
They put him in a mental institution because this is the crap that was peddled at the time.
I remember the people being afraid of Motley Crue because they were satanic.
And I was like, afraid of Motley Crue because they sucked.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, looking back now, it's like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think
we do have more craziness coming, by the way. We're not done with the craziness. I don't know why, but my favorite thing about this whole thing, and I don't understand why, is going to the year 6037 and being in a big empty city where there's a statue of a golden horse with a clock in its stomach. I don't know why, but I love that image.
Okay, Lauren.
Lauren.
I think Lauren's taking a nap.
She's heard all this and she's like, that's it. Craziness index has gone over the top.
She knows.
These guys are nuts. Well, I was going to ask Lauren, but I'll send it to Tim first. The golden horse with a clock in its stomach. Am I missing some kind of symbolism here? That, I know a lot of times when people go with these myths, they go with things that are obvious symbols or references to things. What am I missing with the golden horse with the clock in its stomach?
Yeah, I don't know. Isn't there a horse at the Denver Airport?
Denver Airport. There we go. There's the horse of the apocalypse at the Denver Airport with the glowing eyes and stuff, and
to that. If it was four horses, that would be one thing, but it's not.
No, it's just one horse.
And by that, I mean Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard,
Arn Anderson. Yeah.
Seriously, just the golden – and the clock is what gets me.
Yeah.
I
just love that image. It's very fictiony, I guess.
It's Trojan horse maybe, but horse the apocalypse, but the clock fucking gets me. And I literally don't know. Am I missing some kind of symbolism here?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. It's just the future's equivalent of Big Ben, I guess.
Big Ed. Big Mr.
Yeah, Big Ed. There you go. Big
Ed. it's getting kooky. So, let's explore this, Kurt, since it's your favorite aspect of the story.
I don't know. I just love it. I just think I don't think there's any symbolism. I just think it's a cool random thing that they thought was neat and they put it in there. Like, I love the imagery of that. Like, I could see that being in some bad sci-fi time travel movie, you know, and I don't know why. I just love that picture that paints, I guess.
So did they say it was? Was it a linear clock or a digital clock?
They didn't say.
Because, what, 6,000 years in the future, I would think that they would be beyond
time.
A linear clock or even a digital clock.
Yeah.
Especially since any physicist worth his weight in poop will tell you that time is a man-made construct.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a horse-made construct. Now, the city is ruined, but the horse is fine.
Yeah.
Is the clock still running?
I don't know. I really need to look more into the clock.
Is it at midnight?
Oh, it said it had a clock in the stomach in the middle of the city square that had weird inscriptions on it. So I don't know what the weird inscriptions were.
Timex.
Yeah, probably Timex.
Yeah. Okay. So what else did they do there when they went to the future?
I don't know.
That's pretty far in the future.
6037, they found a giant city in ruins. Only thing that was untouched was the statue of the Golden Horse. Yeah, I know. That's no weirder, that's no dumber than him being a tour guide in the future when he's not even from that time.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Okay.
You faked your way into that job. You lied in your interview on that one. Oh, sure. Yeah, I know my way around. Yeah, right over there. But I'm just no people. No population, just
apparently
ruins.
Apparently not.
Huh. But the
I'll look more into the clock story and see if I can find out more for you guys.
Yeah. Now, who went there to 6,000?
Preston Nichols was one of them, but I don't know who else.
Tim, have you ever met Preston?
No. Seems to me that we had him on as a guest when Tim Beckley and I were doing the Exploring the Bizarre.
I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, but it's been a while, and if I'm thinking of the right person, and I think I am, Preston has also traveled quite a bit over into Europe at some location. Gosh, where was it? Maybe Romania, where he was looking. There were supposedly legends of a cave there that had some kind of maybe time altering abilities. It's been a while. And again, it's one of these stories. I mean, his travels to these, very far flung places was always interesting, but then why he was going there is just okay, he spent all that money to be looking for this and there could have been an ancient alien involvement as well.
He passed away in 2018.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm actually looking through Exploring the Bizarre's past episodes now. But I'll stop so I can concentrate on talking to you. He did write several books about this. Why did he need more than one? So that's what I don't get. I hate to say it because I'm sure he's an incredibly nice man. And please don't send me hate mail for this, but it's like Whitley Strieber. We know his story, but yet he keeps putting out more books about additions to his story. Mm-hmm. Really? Couldn't you have told us this in the other books? That's what smells a little funny to me. Maybe I'm wrong. To be fair, though, I like Whitley Strieber. Sometimes I use his show as ASMR to help me go to sleep. You ever listen to him, Kurt?
No, I haven't, actually. I think I might have a while ago, but just not recently.
Yeah, he's relaxing. Tim, you know him, don't you?
Oh, yeah, somewhat. I mean, we've talked before.
But, I'm sure he's a nice fella. But, really, he doesn't need to keep putting up books about it. I mean, he does because he needs to pay the bills, but...
Well, according to him, these books don't pay any bills. He just does it because he thinks the information needs to get out there.
It wouldn't surprise me, really, how much money is to be made. That's another thing. I'm glad you brought that up. A lot of people say a guy like Al Bielak or Preston Nichols or Whitley Strieber or people have these wild imaginations to get rich off of these stories. You don't get rich off of this stuff.
No. And like Brian, I know you know what my favorite weird story is that I talk about all the time that I'm obsessed with is the Betz Sphere.
Yes.
And they didn't want any sort of publicity about it. And I feel like that gives it so much more credibility that they didn't want anything to do with publicity about the sphere. Yep.
Tim famously said to me on an episode we did about UFOs, that I'm paraphrasing you here because I'm not exactly quoting you, Tim. So you want to call bullshit on me at any time, feel free. That, you know, spending so many years investigating and interviewing people, it lends so much more credibility when the people are like, please don't put my name out there. Please don't say who I am. Please don't put me in a book. Don't give me publicity. That lends a little more credibility to the stuff.
Oh, I think so. Yes.
Yeah. But Preston definitely was not that kind of guy. Al Bielek seemed to revel in the notoriety. And again, maybe it's not for profit. Maybe it's just for ego and notoriety. I mean, you know, maybe he liked being a superstar at paranormal conventions.
I think that's what happens in a lot of cases, is they find out they really enjoy it. So then they start to maybe even unconsciously embellish stuff to keep that going.
Yeah, keep it going. Yeah. But it is weird. I mean, mm-hmm. like Tim, you keep saying there's that weird grain of truth in all of it. Mm-hmm. But where do you separate it?
Yeah, well, I think aliens from Sirius, I think you can pretty much chuck that aside. Yeah.
What if they're reptilian?
We got more coming, but I don't know if it's reptilian.
Are they aliens?
No.
Oh, no. He says it like so. No.
Yeah, come on. Are you crazy?
What are you, nuts? Okay, what do we got next, Kurt?
When we stopped, we were dealing with the old time travel trope of keeping the two Duncans away from each other so they didn't see each other and explode like matter and antimatter, I guess.
Yeah.
So then he writes, the project had now reached apocalyptic proportions. Natural laws were being violated, and it seemed everyone involved felt uncomfortable. Three colleagues and myself had been privately voicing misgivings about the project over a period of months. We had talked about the pitfalls of dealing with time and how this might affect the karma of the planet. We hoped the project would truncate itself. Consequently, our little cabal created a contingency program that only Duncan could activate. It was designed to crash the entire project. We finally decided we'd had enough of this whole experiment. The contingency program was then activated by someone approaching Duncan while he was in the chair and simply whispering the words, quote, "The time is now," in his ear. At this moment, he let loose a monster from his subconscious. And the transmitter actually portrayed a hairy monster. It was big, hairy, hungry, and nasty. But it didn't appear underground.
Why the fuck were you saying I was a monster?
It showed up somewhere else on the base. It would eat anything it could find. And it smashed everything in sight. Several different people saw it, but each person described a different monster. The beast ended up getting the nickname Junior. Yeah. So Junior.
That's right out of Stranger Things too.
Yep. Yeah. And that was that, right. When you asked before what other things were from Stranger Things, right there. My supervisor had ordered us to shut off the generators in order to stop whatever type of phenomenon was occurring. This didn't work, so it was decided that the thing had to be stopped. It was decided that the transmitter had to be shut down. There were two efforts made in this direction. One was to send somebody back and turn off the transmitters on the USS Eldridge. They would be smashed if that's what was necessary to shut them down. The Cameron brothers were sent back to destroy the transmitters on the Eldridge, which they did, and Preston Nichols managed to permanently shut off power to the Montauk chair. The beast disappeared, but by that time the base had been completely destroyed by it. Swerdlow says, quote, "I wasn't there when the Montauk chair was shut off, but I felt it like I had suddenly been unplugged from electricity." In his book, Preston Nichols says, quote, "After the bizarre occurrences of August 12, 1983, the Montauk base virtually emptied. The power was restored, but lights were left on with everything in disarray. Most of the personnel were eventually rounded up, debriefed, and brainwashed accordingly. Over the years, several more Montauk boys have turned up with their accounts of being at the base, including Larry James, Michael Ash, and others. A girl named Maya has an online blog called Montauk Girl, where she discusses her story of being a female member of the group."
Sounds like a bad late 90s pop hit.
Here's a crazy story. This is from the Philadelphia Experiment from A to Z website. Here's a fun little story. Stan Campbell was sent on a Montauk time travel mission. his mission, as he remembers it now, is to go find Jesus and do two things. First, he's supposed to remove a sample of his blood, and then he's supposed to kill him. He finds Jesus. Jesus even volunteers to give him a sample of the blood. Mm-hmm. Operating on his orders from Montauk, Stan then reports on emptying a revolver into Jesus. Now, if that doesn't buy you some time in hell, I guess nothing will. After Stan returned to Montauk, he refused to give up the sample of Jesus' blood. The Montauk technician sent him to Mars, where he gave the blood to Duncan Cameron, and that blood was later injected into him.
I'm sorry. This is going to send me to hell. Like, Tim's already covered his mouth. Like, don't say it, Brian. Just don't say it. You're going to get hate mail. I love to see him empty the revolver into Jesus, and Jesus, like, block the bullets like Wonder Woman with things, but it goes through the stigmata.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from an article on Thought Catalog called Montauk Conspiracy, A Kooky Theory About Time Travel, Aliens, and Mind Control, the article says, quote, people who have visited the site say it's the strangest state park they've ever seen, and that something just doesn't feel right about the whole area. So there are people that say there's something weird.
Because it's Long Island. Have you ever been to Long Island?
No. That's all I got. But
no offense to anybody from Long Island. But no. Yeah, it is funny how it's like every conspiracy wrapped into one. And not even in a neat little package. I mean, it's like, it's like, it looks like the Christmas package that I wrapped with the papers all ripped and torn. Nothing looks good. It's degoupage. It's taking like a piece here and sticking it on.
It's like a charcuterie plate of fringe ideas.
There you go. Know, I like
that.
That's kind
of what that is.
Well, I kind of want a charcuterie plate now. But I remember I'm big and hairy and hungry.
Yeah, so, you're the Montauk Beast. You're junior. But again, you can see how this is like the Philadelphia experiment thing, where it starts with like, yeah, I could see them experimenting on this stuff, and then all of a sudden it goes into shooting guns at Jesus and traveling to 6037. Yeah.
Why did they have to kill Jesus?
He gave them the blood sample, so I don't know.
But I mean, I would understand if they said, If they wanted to tack in the demonic element that so many people tack into these stories, where we want the world to be taken over by Satan, and so in that case we have to kill Jesus to get, but they never went there.
No,
it just, and then we shoot Jesus.
Yeah,
which, like, hello, he's Jesus, he's gonna rise again.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep.
So it doesn't make any sense. There's no logic behind. And then shoot him.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know.
You get you the blood sample will be enough. You know, what more do you need?
Exactly. I'd like to know well, they took the blood sample to Mars, right?
Yeah, and they injected it in one of them.
Which one?
Wasn't it?
Did you say Duncan?
Yeah, I think they injected it into Duncan.
How do they know you matched his type?
I don't know.
Yeah, you know, what's that supposed to do? I mean, is it like Spider-Man or something? And then turns into,
like,
you know,
you said,
like,
there's so much.
Is it the adrenochrome?
Adrenochrome.
I mean,
it's just there's so much that when you look deeper at it, that just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, like even as a young person reading the Philadelphia Experiment or hearing the theories about it, it never made sense to me how the ship transported from Philadelphia to Norfolk and ended up going right in a berth on the boatyard where it was supposed to be. And they didn't know how to control this. Why didn't the ship appear a mile in the sky and then go crashing to the ground? Or why didn't it appear in the ground, fused into the ground? It just knew exactly where to go, and it makes no sense.
You know what the whole thing is? The whole thing is nothing more than the supernatural version of the Aristocrats. Everybody takes the big story and just makes it a little weirder each time.
Yeah.
Your job, if you start talking about this, is to make it more fucked up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, that's really what it comes across as.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, you think you know about it. Well, how about the time they went and shot Jesus?
Yep. Yeah.
You know, top
took him bowling, got him drunk, and then shot him.
Yeah, top that one. All right. Then Elvis showed up. And, you know, yep. I mean, what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's like.
I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's just a crazy rabbit hole. But
I do like the idea that they wanted these crazy stories to be out there as disinformation to stop people from really.
I don't even think they wanted all of these crazy stories. I think it's organic. I think, no offense to either of you who, you know, spend a great deal of time in this community of weirdness. It attracts a certain element that can be not quite right. Not everybody involved, obviously, but there are certain people that get sucked into these things that, believe that reptilians are coming from Sirius to time travel for the perfect fudge brownie recipe. I mean, we don't know. But this particular one seems to go off in more crazy directions than any other of these conspiracies.
Yeah.
Do you have anything compared to this?
There was the Gemstone Files, which was a conspiracy thing years ago that seemed that was like trying to tie everything together, you know, and even along those lines, you get to like the Danny Casolaro thing with the octopus that he was working on, where all these different conspiracies were coming together in one picture. And then he ends up dead in a bathtub, you know, so I have seen this, but not to this. You know, I love a crazy story. I love the story of the UFO here in Wisconsin that they were making pancakes and they stopped to get water and gave the guy a space pancake.
That's which like was what we said would be my ideal interaction with a UFO, sharing the pancakes.
Yeah, the pancakes. You know, like I love crazy stories, but this is like up at this one goes to 11.
Yeah, the only two things I can think of that are missing from this, and these seriously, the only two things missing are Atlantis and Freemasons.
I don't know about Atlantis, but I bet you could probably find Freemasons, Freemasons / Illuminati, you know, somehow involved with this. And somehow I bet you that you could find in the whole octopus conspiracy some kind of connections with Philadelphia experiment.
It's like the Kevin Bacon thing, like the 6 degrees or whatever, that you could look deep enough, it's going to be connected to it somehow.
Yep.
So we're gonna have to go to final thoughts on this one. I don't know if Lauren's back yet. Lauren, are you back?
Sorry, yeah, I've had problems with my internet, so I have.
No, we saw you fade in and out a few times. Okay. So we're going to go to wrap up final thoughts. Do you have any questions or comments about these cases in your final summation?
It's just that it's a whole lot of crazy.
I don't know if I could sum it up any better than that.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
I don't know Tim or Kurt's views on religion. I'm very open about mine. You know, everyone knows I'm an atheist, and Lauren is.
Oh, as soon as he said he's an atheist, he freezes.
I know. How about that? Huh?
They have to get Jesus's blood.
You froze for a second.
What's that?
You froze for a second. You're good now.
Oh, okay. Probably froze when I said I'm an atheist.
We were laughing about.
Okay. But as Lauren, I know, is a believing Christian, what possible explanation would there be for the bit about we had two missions to go get a vial of Jesus's blood and then to kill him, when it had nothing to do with anything evil or demonic? Does that make any sense to you whatsoever? No, she didn't want to answer.
I the thing is I don't know if it's I think it's more complicated than that. I think there are far more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than I dreamt of in your philosophies. It could be a thousand things. You know, we've only scratched the surface of our knowledge of the universe and the way things are made. You know I have my beliefs, but it would be arrogant of me to say that they were 100% right, or, you know, that there isn't another force. I mean, if I believe that God created the universe, then he's created other beings out there, possibly.
But what about the vial of blood of Jesus and then shooting him for no reason?
Well, the thing is that relics have always existed. Holy relics have always existed. And they've not always been holy. They have been duck's blood. I mean, there are 1,000 pieces of the one true cross. I mean, it couldn't have been that big.
It was a big cross, Lauren.
It was. It might not. Yeah. It's. There's a lot to debate, and you know we have to remember that as well as Christ, the Son of God. There was also the historical personage of Jesus, who was a freedom fighter. So we've got to remember that as well, is that this was a person that lived. There is documented evidence, and there's enough to suggest that there was somebody out there doing good, or, you know, speaking this ideology and fighting for freedoms.
Which is why I don't understand why they wanted to shoot him. For no reason.
Because it's a cool story, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think that's what it boils down to. That is, if this is disinformation, it's like, might as well throw that in there to really set people off.
Oh, yeah. It does remind me about having Jesus killed by revolver. The old Lenny Bruce bit where he says, you know, you Christians are really lucky Jesus bought it when he did. Because if he bought it now, you'd all be running around with little electric chairs around your neck. So anyway, Lauren, your final take on Philadelphia Experiment, Montauk Project. Do you believe part of it, some of it, none of it, or all of it?
I have to say some of it, possibly. I mean, they were testing LSD, so, you know, some of it could have been the fact that they covertly give somebody some LSD and they had this massive trip. So there's that. So I guess, yeah, some of it might be potentially believable if that person was under the influence of some government testing chemical, government testing some chemicals.
Well, you got to say this about LSD. It is powerful enough to make people like the Grateful Dead. That's not fair. I love the Grateful Dead. I'm sorry. That was a joke, people. I love the Dead. But you're right, Lauren. That's a good point that, you know, some of these people may have been there and been given some serious fucking drugs and they don't know what they did or didn't see. And then after I had this hit, man, I went to Mars where they shot me up with Jesus blood. It was really, you know, that, I mean, she's right. I never even thought of that.
Yeah.
Good on you, Lauren. That was good. You brought me down to reality. Stop making fun of these people and just realize that's some good shit they're on.
Yep. Some Sandoz quality LSD.
That's right. Tim, some of it, none of it, all of it, or what are you, fucking nuts?
Well, I'll say A, and then what was that, D or C?
A little bit of A and D.
Some of it, but are you really fucking nuts? No, I should say that, you know, for anyone who's interested, you know, go and research. Einstein wrote at least two papers when he was still living in Germany on his unified field theory, but then withdrew both of them because he felt that they were incomplete. And part of the story of the Philadelphia experiment was that while his writings, his original writings about the unified field theory were incomplete, there was enough going on that they were able to work with, you know, whatever the original Philadelphia experiment, you know, was supposed to be, some kind of manipulation using intense electromagnetic energies. You know, something very similar to then the atomic bomb, which was also came from Einstein. So I think, you know, throw out a lot of this, you know, stuff, some of this, you know, the aliens and the teleportation and all of that, and look at the core story and what we were able to do science-wise in the early 1940s. And remember, the genesis of this was supposed to have started like the atomic bomb research in the 1930s. So, you know, just imagine what kind of technology we had available to us at that time, and then take it into the early 40s. You know, was there enough information gleaned from Einstein's incomplete unified field theories that they tried something that there was like a pretty major disaster to it? But from that mistake, they learned a lot more from it that then they were able to continue research later on.
You know,
so that's the only thing I have to say.
and the amazing thing about it is, you're right. You got to look at the technology at the time and exactly when it was in time that, like we'd mentioned, we were in war. There was this new technology called radar, which was brand new, which we knew the Germans and the Japanese had. And it's only 20, and it's an air war for the first time, you know, can be completely fought in air. Only about 20 years from perfecting that. And in 20 years from there, they were in space with those things. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the time when the most money and research was thrown into that pot. Because look what we were able to accomplish in just the next 20 years. Something weird was going on with that budget and funding. So, Kurt, I know your answer is all of it, but
100% all of it. I think they kept the really weird stuff out. I think there's some truth to it. I think experiments were done on a ship, and I think things were done at this base, but whether it's disinformation or just a bad game of telephone or whatever, I just think that it got added on to so much that it just kind of became ridiculous.
I'm in agreement that I believe with the Philadelphia experiment, there was absolutely military research of what they could do with these naval ships while at war. No doubt. I mean, because that's what we'd be doing now with research and funding. Montauk, again, I believe there's all kinds of weird shit going on military bases to see what we can do and improve on and create. No problem with that. The wackiness and craziness, again, come on, folks. It is, like I said, it's the paranormal aristocrats. It just gets weirder and weirder. Not saying all of it's not true. There could be some really – Junior could be real. Who the fuck knows?
I mean, at Montauk, they could have been working on remote viewing very easily, but just didn't want that getting out.
Remote viewing was – secret mm-hmm. remote viewing was going on at various facilities at around that same time across the country.
Yep. Colleges, military bases, like everybody was trying for whatever they could to get one up on – who we consider to be our enemies.
And right. Psychic research all over the country.
Yeah.
What was the school in the Carolinas that had the big program that where they invented the cards with the triangle, the wavy lines, the square, the circle.
Zenerdeck or something like that? I can't remember what exactly it's called. Well,
I mean, we know now that shit was going on for real. As a matter of fact, interesting story. A former guest on this show, the most unlikely of guests for this topic, believe it or not. The legendary Canadian comedian Dave Thomas of SCTV fame and Strange Brew and, you know, Rat Race and all these great things was a guest on the show. His mother was that professor's assistant with really? All the psychic research stuff.
Cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy that he was like, yeah, I grew up playing next door to where they were doing the psychic testings.
Hmm. You know, so Rat Race?
Huh?
He was in a Rat Race?
Yeah. He was the lawyer that ended up stealing the money with the hooker at the end.
Okay.
The funniest line in the entire movie where they're placing the bet to the hooker. I want to get in the jacuzzi filled with Pepto-Bismol, wearing a cowboy hat, and I clip your toenails while you shave my buttocks. How much will that cost?
He also does the best Bob Hope imitation.
Best Bob Hope. He told me all about him and Bob Hope's friendship, too. That's a great episode. People should go back and listen to that when Dave Thomas was on.
Oh, he froze again.
Coming back, emailing with him the other day.
He froze again.
But, the fact that, you know, one of my favorite, one of my heroes growing up, I loved Dave Thomas. It was great having him on, and I was just emailing him the other day. He might be coming on again soon.
Sweet.
So,
cool.
I look forward to that. But yeah, he was in like those labs where they were doing these psychic experiments that people denied for decades that was being done. But we know now it was.
Yeah, that happens a lot. They're like, we don't do that. And then 20 years down the road, they admit to doing that.
So who knows what's going on at Montauk. But the last question before we finish this part is, should we do a part 3 where we talk about MK Ultra?
That's just a big topic.
It is.
I'm all for it though.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Now I know Lauren is not available next week, but the three of us can get together on a time to do MK Ultra next week. You guys pick a day. We'll do that off air. We'll pick a day. We'll set up to do MK Ultra, which will round out the trifecta of this weirdness.
Okay.
But my last question, and Lauren, I'm going to start with you. Of all the really wacky, crazy shit in these stories between the Philadelphia Experiment and Montauk Project, which one do you kind of secretly hope is true?
The Philadelphia Project.
The teleportation part or the time travel part?
Oh,
you want that to be true. Okay. Yeah. Tim, what do you secretly want to be true?
Well, I'll go with the Philadelphia Experiment as well, you know, just because I think out of all of them, that's the one that is most likely to, at least to some extent, to be true.
Kurt, what do you secretly wish is true of all these weirdness?
Probably what everybody else said, the Philadelphia Experiment.
All right, well, you're all wrong. The correct answer is Junior.
I was going to say Junior.
I want Junior to be true.
Say Junior or the giant horse statue with the clock in it.
It's all about the giant horse clock. Yep. Isn't that funny? The giant horse clock?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got a giant horse clock. I'm so juvenile. Yeah, Junior. I'm wishing Junior was the real part. Kind of like the Jersey Devil thing. I want that to be real too.
Yeah.
And Mothman,
Jersey Devil is real. It's on We Do in the Shadows. They found it.
They
killed it, mounted his head, and it's on their wall. So yes, he did exist.
But what are you saying? There's only one?
Yeah, maybe there's multiple Jersey Devils. So one did come from Montauk.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Wow, you just blew my mind, dude.
I'm surprised Mothman didn't make his way into this yet. He could be perched on the radio antenna. It would be perfect.
Yeah, once it's our turn to add to the shit show, we're adding Mothman.
Okay,
Mothman.
I'm gonna add Mothman. What are you gonna add to the story?
I'm going to add the Bette Sphere. I'm going to say the Bette Sphere was actually part of the Montauk chair that somehow ended up in Florida.
Ooh, that's a good one. Tim, what about you? What are you adding?
Oh, well, if we're going to go with cryptids, I'd say let's get the Loch Ness Monster involved as well. Or the Lake Champlain Monster.
Lake Champlain, yep, the Lake Champlain one. Yep,
they
there you
swam
go.
Over. They could have swam over there.
But it's actually the Hudson River Monster.
There you go. I just saw something the other day about a new photograph of the Hudson River Monster. You may have just made that up, but supposedly there is. There's a Hudson River Monster.
No, there is. There's also a Lake Erie Monster, I'm supposedly I'm able to see from where I live. But I've been to Lake Erie many a time at different parts of Lake Erie. I've never seen the monster.
Keep trying. Try harder.
Yep. Just not looking hard enough.
I'm not, apparently. Kurt, you got to come up here because I'll take you to Lake Erie, show you where the monster is, and to Niagara Falls, the greatest place in the world, and wings. And Tim, of course, you know you're invited because I always tell Tim you got to come up for wings, but we all got to get together for wings.
And monster viewing. Monster.
That's
site.
Right. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Lake Erie Monster. We got a lot of paranormal shit in Buffalo, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I sent you that whole list of stuff.
Yeah, we talked about it on our episode.
Yeah, but that's a talk for another day. What I'm going to do is I'm going to sign this one off, and the three of us will gather next week for the third and final chapter, MK Ultra. So, from Kurt, who is suffering in snow like myself in the great state of Wisconsin, Tim, who is not suffering in snow, in the beautiful state of Indiana, who is probably going nuts now because the NCAA tournament's going on, and that's all they do in Indiana is watch basketball.
That's right.
This is Brian in Buffalo, and joining me always,
Lauren from Swansea.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
But I don't really want to talk about the bathroom buddy.